This is Amarins.
Hi, everybody. This is Arthur. Welcome to episode 18 of my podcast. Today, I'm just going to do a little bit of catching up on things, partly because I want to save myself for recording the Friday show, and also because I don't really have a specific topic that I wanted to talk about today, just a few little odds and ends. First of all, last time, I started talking a bit about the New Zealand governmental structure. And all I wanted to talk about today about that, nothing in any great detail, was just about where they talked about local territorial authorities and school boards of trustees, which are the both of which are respectively the smallest units of elective government in New Zealand. Now, the local territorial authorities could be cities, they could be rural districts. There's a variety. Now, in the 1980s, the central government reorganized the local structure, local government structure in New Zealand, and the result is what we have now, which, you know, is works really well, apparently, now. Although at the time, some people didn't think so. Where we live, it's called North Shore City, and it's one of the five cities or districts that make up the Auckland region. And that's actually an important thing to know about New Zealand. When you're talking about cities, New Zealanders tend to talk about a region. In an American sense, it's as if when you talk about Chicago, you were talking about certainly Chicago and suburban Cook County, but probably the entire metro region around, you know, including all of the collar counties around Chicago. And when Americans talk about cities, they tend to talk about the legal entity of the city, unless they're specifically mentioning it. Like, for example, again in Chicago, people might say Chicago land, and then you know they're talking about the region. So, in a sense, the way that New Zealanders use the word city is a bit like they do in Britain. A specific area within a city is called a suburb, and in American terms, we'd probably call that a neighborhood. And they're using it in the literal sense of the word, suburbis, which is a division of a city, a smaller unit of the urban environment, as opposed to a legally separate town. At one time, I don't know if they still do, but at one time in Britain, they used the term exurb to refer to a town lying outside of a city, where in that same sense, Americans would use the word suburb. But it really confused me a lot when I first arrived in New Zealand, because people would talk about, what suburb are you from? And I thought they were talking like North Shore City, because it's across the bridge from Auckland City. But that's not at all what they meant. They meant an area within a particular city. So at the time, we lived in an area of North Shore City called Birkenhead, and that's what they wanted to know. They didn't want to know that I was from North Shore City. They wanted to know that I was from Birkenhead. Similarly, people in Auckland City, they might say they're from Ponsonby or Mount Eden or any number of other places within Auckland City itself. You know, they're within the legal boundaries of Auckland City, but their suburb will be a neighborhood within that city. It takes some getting used to, I have to tell you. Now, most cities, all cities have an elected city council and an elected mayor. And depending on how big the city is, the job may or may not be very full-time, although they very often are very demanding, even in smaller districts. But they have a corporate side, which actually runs the show, you know, a manager and various executives and other staff who do the various work that the local council has to do. And people elect the councillors and the mayor directly. And in some places, they also elect community boards, but not all cities have them. Now, there's one thing that's... there's another layer of government as well called district health boards, which oversee the hospitals and clinics and whatnot within a given region. And those are also popularly elected. And I don't know specifically who can stand for who can run for a position on a district health board, but I think it's pretty much anyone. However, some district health boards have set aside specific seats for Māori, as they do in Parliament, which is an issue I'll get to when I talk about Parliament. But essentially, it's to ensure that the native peoples, the tangata whenua, as they're called, are represented on the district health boards. But not all district health boards do that. Some do, some don't. And some local councils are apparently starting to set aside seats as well. Interesting thing about the elections for local government, and anyone who lives within the legal boundaries is entitled to vote in that election, which stands to reason. However, if you own property in an area but don't live in it, you're still entitled to vote. The theory behind that being that if you own property, then you have a vested interest in what the government does, which is the same logic, basically, that allows me as a U.S. citizen to still vote in presidential and congressional elections, because as a citizen, I have a vested interest in who gets into those positions, although in my case, I don't own any property in America. And the first time I ran across it, I thought that was the oddest thing I'd ever heard. It sounded positively 18th century to allow people to vote just by virtue of being property owners. But it does kind of make sense in that if you do own property in another district, if you don't get to vote, then you have no say in how the tax money is used. And that doesn't seem entirely fair either. But the thing is that if, say, two people own property together, say two partners or husband and wife or whatever they might be, only one of them can vote. They have to just decide which one. And the same thing is true if, say, there's a trust or a business that owns property in another district. They have to designate somebody to cast their vote. They only get one vote. I think, theoretically, no matter how many people own the property. But it is kind of an interesting little sidelight there that owning property in another district gives you the right to vote in that other district. But as I say, within a particular city or district or whatever, anybody who lives there and is otherwise eligible to vote can vote in those elections. And the next local body elections, as they're called, will be in October. And they will, I think, be exclusively conducted by post. They mail out the ballot papers, you fill them out, and you post them back. And turnout is returning is actually not quite as good as you would think with those circumstances, partly because I think they give you too long to get them back. That could be part of it. You can drop them off in person, or you can just post them back. It's a prepaid envelope. And that's what we've usually done. We've just ended up posting it back. Although 1 year, I never voted at all. This is probably actually the last elections, which is why I don't remember them too clearly, because I was sick as a dog. I'd gotten an inner ear infection, and I had vertigo, and I couldn't even stand up, let alone the last thing I cared about was voting. So, yeah, this year will be interesting thing to be voting in the local elections. Our current mayor isn't very popular for a variety of reasons, so we'll see what ends up happening with that. And I also briefly mentioned school board of trustees elections. And I'm probably going to talk about schools more in detail in a different podcast, because that's a whole subject unto itself. But the board of trustees is made up of people within the school community. It's not a geographic thing as such. They do have community representatives, but they have to be connected to the school in some way. Because anybody can stand for election to the Board of Trustees, but the only people who are eligible to vote, as I understand it, are the parents of the students in the schools. Now, I might have that somewhat wrong, and if so, I will correct myself, or somebody can correct me. But it's not a general election as you would find in America. But the Boards of Trustees have a somewhat different role than they do with American schools anyway, because they don't set curriculum, for example. They do try to juggle their own local budget and things like that, as you would, say, with any not-for-profit organization. But they don't have to worry about, say, fights over a particular book in class or something like that, because it's not, in some ways, it's not up to the local school. I mean, it's complicated, which is why I want to talk about schools another time. But just suffice it to say for now that the school boards of trustees in New Zealand are different from the school boards that you find in America. So that's just a little bit about some of the upcoming elections, and I'm sure that'll be coming up again once the elections get closer. I'll talk about that in more detail as well, because the local body elections will be coming up before the parliamentary elections, which will probably be a year after that. Now, one of the things I wanted to update was the pet situation. Because I haven't talked really about anything about Sive or our cat Curzon or anything for a long time now. And I just thought I'd give you a little update to say that our cat Curzon is starting to get adjusted to being an only child. He used to run into the house, and we had a baby gate that was over the master bedroom door so that he could get in and out, but the dog couldn't chase him in there because we kept his food in the ensuite, which is like a master bathroom in American speak. Again, so that he could eat in peace, and also so she wouldn't eat it up. And the dog, wouldn't eat it up. But he's starting to get used to the idea that she's not here, and probably not coming back, if he can reason that out, I'm not sure. So he strolls in now more often than not, And the other day, he, I guess it was sometime last week, he started coming into Nigel's office when he would be in there, and eventually jumped in his lap. And we have just like a little sofa thing for guests in his office, and he started jumping up on that and sleeping on it. So this is all very good, but Chris had made me feel really bad because he would not come into my office. He would go past the door to my office almost as quickly as he could, maybe have a quick look in, but that was about it. And of course, the reason is because Sive used to spend a good chunk of her day in my office with me, you know, sleeping on the floor. And so when he went past, that's often where she would charge him from. She would run out the door and try to tackle him. Never successfully, but she tried. So in his mind, I'm sure, she was in there. Well, today, for the first time, he wandered into my office, and he had a little look around. He had a sniff. He let me pick him up and hold him in my lap for just a moment, but it was progress because he hasn't done that yet, and not since Sive died. And had a bit of wander around. He went out and came in a couple of different times, so I think that probably give him a few more days, and he'll be sleeping on the sofa in my office as well, and maybe even on my lap, which would be really nice because it's now winter, which actually brings me to my next topic. It is bloody cold right now, and it's going to get colder. Now, of course, this is relative terms. To somebody in, say, Southern California or Florida, our winter temperatures would be cold, probably. But to somebody in Chicago or Minnesota or whatever, they would be positively tropical, because it doesn't get really very cold here in wintertime. It maybe gets down to the low 40s at night, and maybe at most the upper 30s, but it almost never gets down to freezing or below in Auckland. I mean, obviously, other parts of the country, it's different. In the South Island, especially around Queenstown in the Southern Alps, it gets really cold and snowy. But here, it doesn't get that cold. We don't have frosts, as a general rule, occasionally. We don't get snow. Nothing freezes. The grass grows year-round. You have to mow the grass all year long. And trees, well, of course, most of the native trees are evergreen anyway, of one sort or another. So that's not really terribly relevant. Basically, it's milder than anything I knew in Chicago, that's for sure. But still, you know, you get used to it, and it's cold. And so we're particularly thrilled that the central heating and air conditioning is being installed on Friday. It's not a moment too soon, I have to say. This past weekend, Nigel and I went down to his sister and brother-in-law's house in Thames. Now, Thames is on the Firth of Thames. And if you look on a map and see Auckland, and if you look sort of to the southeast-ish across a body of water, you'll find Thames. And that whole region gets really cold in wintertime, much colder than Auckland is, and actually can be hotter in summer, too, than Auckland is. We went down for a 50th birthday party of his brother-in-law, and it was a good time. We had a potluck dinner, so it was interesting to see what all the various people would bring, different approaches to food, I guess you'd say. And there was plenty of beer and wine and whatnot. Some people had a wee bit too much, although I wasn't one of them. I was a good boy. And I wasn't even tipsy when we left there. And we stayed with another of Nigel's sisters that night, and it was really cold. But we survived. I mean, we were warm enough. We had we brought our duvet with us, and she had lots of extra blankets, so we were perfectly warm. Yeah, we left probably around midday-ish on Sunday and came home. On the way, after we got home, actually, we went out shopping. And I ended up, on Saturday before we left, I had gotten a digital recorder so that I can go out and about in the world, which is one of the things I had mentioned that I was waiting to get. However, it came with a 64 megabyte compact flash card, and on Sunday after we got back, we went out shopping, and I was looking for a 2 gigabyte one. And I mean, they're plenty easy to find, but I obviously want to get the best price I can. And that was the sticking point, because there were a couple computer shops that said on their website that they had them, and of course they didn't have them. So I'm still sort of holding off. But what that means, it really doesn't mean all that much. It just means that at present I have to record in MP3 format, because if I record in WAV format, which is uncompressed, I could only record for like 3 or 4 minutes, which is a bit pointless. But I'm going to get that sorted anyway. But at least I have the recorder. That's a step in the right direction. And those are most of the updates at this stage. I did want to, of course, have another teaser for Friday's episode, which I have a very special guest, but I'll mention that again before I end this one. I do want to get into comments. However, you have to bear with me for 1 second. I'm usually prepared, and there's one thing I forgot to get. So while I'm waiting for that page to load, I'm going to back up and just mention in passing something I saw in the news today. It was a Reuters story. It was headlined, "Bush aides may have illegally lost email, Democrats." Karl Rove and dozens of other White House staffers appear to have illegally routed official emails through a Republican group that subsequently deleted them, a congressional report said. By using Republican National Committee email accounts for official business, senior White House aides may have broken a law requiring them to preserve presidential records, the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform said in an interim report. And I'm thinking, duh, that would have been exactly why they routed them through Republican National Committee servers, so that they wouldn't have to they wouldn't have to keep them on file, because some of those emails would have been really quite embarrassing, I would have thought. But hey, that's just me. So anyway, back to the comments, now that the page is loaded. I have to give my apologies to three people who left comments over on my Podomatic site, Jason, Frank, and Ramble Redhead. The problem is that Podomatic, like a lot of blogging sites, is supposed to send me an email whenever somebody posts a comment. And I've been checking it every couple of days just to make sure, because if you've ever been to my blog or the Podomatic site, you'll know that I like to respond in writing to any comments that people leave. Well, the last time anybody left any comments was for Emerin's number 11, I'm Still Here, which was right after Sive died. So there hasn't been anything to read, so there hasn't been any big dramas. And I just thought, oh, well, people aren't placing comments there, I don't have to worry about it. So I went ahead and got ready to do the last podcast, and I read the comments and all that. And then I went to the Podomatic site and noticed that there were three comments sitting there that I had missed somehow, because Podomatic didn't send me one of those emails to tell me that comments had been left. So I missed those three comments, and actually, as I was just looking to check out these comments, I noticed that there was also another one for the most recent episode. So before I get into the comments for this episode, I want to go I want to go back to episode 15, No Nukes, and go over those comments. There's only three of them, but fair is fair. If I'm reading the comments, I should read everybody's, shouldn't I? So the first is from Jason, who said, "Thanks for mentioning my blog. It doesn't seem possible that it's been 20 years since the nuclear freeze happened. I'm surprised the U.S. didn't threaten a boycott of some kind, but after all, Ronnie was in office, and a boycott is so anti-business." And I said, "Glad to be able to mention your blog. Keep commenting, and you'll get more mentions." And since he has, he's at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com, and there's always a link to it in my blog under blogs I read. I said, "That's a good point about boycotts being anti-business. You're right, that's probably the reason the Reaganites didn't go down that road, even though it probably would have worked." And I actually hadn't thought of that before. I always thought it was a bit curious that they weren't a bit more strident, but they wouldn't have done anything to endanger business. Frank said, "Arthur, I'm enjoying your podcast more each time I listen. The nuclear freeze program is great. I knew about the no nuke policy, but you brought more insight to it for me. Thanks." And I said, "Thanks for the feedback. I try and share things that I've learned or observed about this country because I've always thought it's interesting to learn about other places, especially from someone who lives there. Glad you're getting something out of my efforts." And I hope that everyone gets something out of my efforts in these various episodes, because I do try to share things from the perspective of somebody who's just discovering some of these things in some cases, or to give the benefit of what I've observed, because it is interesting to see things from somebody else's viewpoint. And it's probably easier for example, for an American to understand an American talking about New Zealand than about a New Zealander, just because we Americans start out with some shared assumptions and some shared views and whatnot, worldviews or whatever. And then Ramble Redhead said, "I want to thank you for taking the time to do such great show, and glad you're getting more comments. You will get more as the show continues to grow. Enjoyed the shows you did with Archer and Tim. Hope we can chat again soon." And I said, "Thanks for the compliment. I think I'm getting more used to podcasting now, and that was certainly helped when you had me on your show." As you may recall, he did a two-part interview with me, must have been about a part of 2 months ago, nearly, 6 weeks anyway, which was a lot of fun, really. So that actually did help, I think. And as it happens, I think it was right after he left that comment, we did end up running into each other online and ended up chatting for like 2 hours. Time just flew by. But those are those comments from episode 15, No Nukes. And now I'm going to get right into episode 17, which was Happy Birthday, Magna Carta. And this, again, is at the Podomatic site. It's already there. I figured I might as well start first. And this is from Condo Blogger, who said, I can't wait to hear about which film Kiwis like the best. I hope Aliens is on the list, though I have a feeling that The Man from Snowy River is going to show up. And actually, it didn't. I've been unable to listen to your show for a couple of weeks, but plan on catching up tomorrow, which means that he probably hasn't heard the episode yet, because I'm just reading this just now. Apparently posted about 2 hours ago as I'm recording. So I'm not going to respond in any great detail, because I don't want to... Well, actually, you'll probably hear this one after he hears that one, come to think of it. But it's good to hear from him again, because he's been busy for a while, as I've noticed from reading his blog. And so it's good to get comments from him again. Now back over at amarins.blogspot.com, which is, of course, my main blog, Mike said, Arthur, I can't express how much I enjoyed your show today. For me, an in-depth discussion about Magna Carta and what it means to Western governments is like the show that I dream one of my podcasters will do. You did an excellent job. Loved it. And I said, wow, thanks. It's clearly a subject that's important to me. Thanks for the support. And it's interesting because when somebody says something like that, there's a piece of, I'm Kiwi enough now that I'm like, oh, shucks, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't necessarily really want to say much, but it really means a lot to me when people let me know that they like something or that they think something that I did something well or what have you, because, well, partly because it makes things a bit more worthwhile, but also just because, everybody likes to get a little pat on the back now and again, don't they? I'm no different. But, I'm trying to come up with things that I think are interesting to talk about, but as I have said before, I'm sure I have, if there's anything that you specifically want to know about, questions you may have, topics you might be interested in, by all means, leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com, and I'll do my best to try to address it. I may not be able to right away, especially if it's something I need to research, but I'll certainly give it a shot. Next was Daniel, who said, I also enjoyed the information on Magna Carta, but I noticed something that I'm curious about. I've always heard it called the Magna Carta. However, you never included the when talking about it. I guess my question is the superfluous? Not that I talk about it more than once in a blue moon, but it is now killing me that I've been saying it wrong forever. And I said, technically, it's just Magna Carta with no the. This has to do with Latin not having a definite article like the, or something. I don't speak Latin, or barely even English sometimes. At any rate, simply calling it Magna Carta is the common academic convention, and my bachelor's degree is in political science. However, calling it the Magna Carta is also common, if technically incorrect. The truth is, it's one of those things, it doesn't really matter what you call it as long as people know what you're talking about. I just call it Magna Carta sort of as a creature of habit kind of thing, because, I mean, that's what I learned. And so that's what I call it. There's no more reason to it than that. Larkin said, Arthur, keep up the great shows, and you will make New Zealand a new gay mecca for Americans. I wanted to give you feedback on Callbox 7. Most of the time when I first hear of a new podcast on politics, I think, oh no, another nutjob who bases most of their beliefs on conspiracy theories or throws around a lot of rhetoric with no substance. I was very pleased this was not the case. And I said, making New Zealand a gay mecca wouldn't be so bad. I'm glad you like Callbox 7, and thanks so much for letting me know. When I recommend something, I always wonder if others like it or not, so I appreciate the feedback. And I do hope that you've given Callbox 7 a listen, because I think it's a great podcast. I haven't had time yet to listen to the current one, or actually, for that matter, the current Hello Waffles. It's just because I've been so busy with this past weekend and everything. But I'll be catching up tomorrow at the part-time job, no doubt, when I've got nothing to do and sitting there listening to my iPod all day long. Don't get me started on that subject. Then Archer said, you know more about the Magna Carta than anyone I know. Good discussion about legalizing drugs. There's so much to think about. I doubt drugs will ever be legalized in the U.S. Too many differing views. A teaser. I'm looking forward to Friday's show. And I said, actually, it's not that I know all that much, but I had great teachers who taught me how to find the information I want. It helps to know things to start out, of course, but research makes up the difference. And it really does. I mean, I don't... some of the stuff that I talked about, I actually had to look up because I couldn't remember all the details. But, I mean, that's the point. If you know how to find information, you don't have to know all the details. You just go looking for them, and then you've got them when you need them. I mean, because nobody can know everything about everything. Well, most of us can't. And as long as you learn how to find the information you want and how to evaluate the information when you find it, then the rest is easy. Anyway, I said, as for legalizing drugs, there's a lot of vested interests in just keeping things as they are, whether it makes sense or not. And my view, really, is that we should at least be discussing other options. And finally, Calvin said, I have to say that I agree with a lot of New Zealand's movie choices. The whole Magna Carta thing is strange. I hate people who always say they are right because they are in the middle. I want to ask them, so if you're choosing between Hitler and Stalin, where does being in the middle put you? I honestly think it's people being even lazier than wanting to make a hardline stance and defending it or decided, more proper in my opinion, on the issues. So what's the surprise? I'm so intrigued. And I responded, I agreed with a lot of the movie choices too, and I did. There were a few on there I didn't care for, but there's also a few on the most hated. I would have put on the most hated as well. So, and I said, in general, I can respect and even understand people who take a reasoned position rather than take an intellectually lazy middle ground, unless, of course, that's where they end up after thinking about it. This is true whether I agree with them or not. And those are most of the comments about episode 17, was it? Right, there actually was one more comment from John Q Public, who said, Arthur, enjoyed the show a great deal and appreciate your global viewpoint. Thank God there are people all over the world talking about the catastrophe that Bush is. Bush wouldn't know what the Magna Carta was unless there was a picture and someone explained it to him. He is such a horror. And I actually haven't responded to that one directly. But thanks, John. I appreciate the feedback. And I agree with you completely, as is probably abundantly obvious by now. Now, there was one other thing about episode 17 I wanted to mention, and that's my sincere apologies to everybody that I forgot to put in the links to various things like that movie list at flix.co.nz and the various podcasts I mentioned and whatnot. I was in a bit of a rush when I was trying to do the show notes, and I forgot and then didn't come back to me. So I had an attack of CRS, you know, can't remember stuff. Archer will know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. However, I will endeavor to do better this time and try to put all the comments in. But on the subject of my blog, a couple of things. First of all, I have posted the first photo of me. Yes, it's true. I have put a photo of myself. It was literally the first photo of me. It was taken when I was 1 day old. And the motivation behind that actually was that, as you may remember, I've been getting a lot of flack about not having a photo of me on my blog, which wasn't on purpose. And I was thinking, oh, I've got to put up my first photo. And that clicked in my mind that I actually do have literally the first photo. And so I had to post that online. And Calvin and Jimmy have both already left comments on that. So if you want to see what I look like as a little bubby, you can see me on my blog, amrinst.blogspot.com. And I promise I will put up a photo. I just don't have one yet that I like. I actually took some myself yesterday, and I didn't like them. So, no, those are scrapped. But I'm still working on it, and I haven't given up yet, so don't you either. But also on the subject of the blog, there is a new frapper. There's Mark from Montreal. I actually don't know how to say that with a French-Canadian accent, but I believe it's Montreal or something. Brett, maybe somebody can let me know, because I don't know. But thanks, Mark, for joining my frapper map. And if you haven't put a pin on my frapper map, feel free to do so. And also, sometime back I mentioned putting reviews in iTunes. And since then, Eddie2870 from New York City has done so. Thank you very much, Eddie. And I wanted to tell you something that does matter about the reviews. I mean, on the face of it, they're all a bit of, yeah, so what? Because I don't know if anybody really, you know, chooses to listen to a podcast because of the reviews or what have you. But what it's important for is when you start to get a lot of reviews, where you show up on the iTunes store moves up. Now, here's why that matters. If somebody does a search for Amarins on the iTunes store, this is particularly true in America, they won't see me anywhere on the results page. If they go to podcasts, there will be two podcasts listed, neither of which is mine. If they click on the thing that says See More, then on the next page, they will see my podcast listed with all the others. But since I now have four reviews, my little show badge has moved up several spaces. So if I get a few more reviews, I might actually be on that first page. And that's actually what I'm trying to get at. It's not I don't really care where I show up in the rankings of various podcasts relative to each other. What I really want, to be brutally honest, is that if somebody does a search in iTunes for Amarins, that it'll show up in that initial results page. Because if somebody has to go looking beyond that, they might not bother. And that's, for me, that's really what it's all about. So if you do feel inclined to leave a review on iTunes, that would help me achieve that goal. If you don't want to, don't worry about it. I certainly won't hold it against anybody. But it is helpful primarily for search functions, because let's face it, the rankings don't really mean all that much on iTunes. I know that QCast Connecticut and Archer Radio are often switching places back and forth, and at the end of the day, I don't really think it matters that much which one is listed where. But having said that, I did notice that Calvin and I have been switching back and forth with number one and number two on the Podomatic listings for personal journals, but it happens. But certainly I haven't been helping Calvin lately, because I haven't listened to his most recent podcast. I swear I will. One other thing I've been meaning to mention for the longest time is somewhere or other, Archer had mentioned a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that he and the boyfriend had tried by Alan Scott Winery. And I actually found that in the grocery store recently. It was on special. And so I bought a bottle of it, and it was really quite nice. So since they managed to find that where they are, I would bet that you'd probably be able to find that in any good-sized wine store. So if you do see Alan Scott Sauvignon Blanc, I can recommend it. I bought a bottle of the Chardonnay to try, although New Zealand's not really known for Chardonnay. I thought I'd try it anyway. Why not? It was on special. New Zealand is primarily known for Sauvignon Blanc, for Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris, and others as well. But I mean, every country produces some good wines and some bad wines, so this country isn't any different in that regard. But the good wines that come from New Zealand are very good. Unfortunately, I haven't had any bad wines yet, just some that I like more than others. And I suppose really that's all that matters, isn't it, what you like? Right, so those are the main things I wanted to go over this episode. And I, as I said, I have a very special guest for Friday. I'm recording that show later tonight, actually, and I'll be posting it early Friday morning, my time. So it will be available really quite a lot earlier than usual. So if you want to check that out, that will be available on Friday, my time, Friday morning, my time. Very special secret guest. And that is really it for this edition. As always, please leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com. I appreciate each and every comment I get. Or you can send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. And as I've said before, I don't read the emails as part of the comments. So if you want to say something more privately, that's the way to do it. Or you can also send me an email and say, hey, go ahead and read this, in which case I will. But my assumption is always that you don't want it read unless you tell me otherwise. And that is it for this week. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you again on Friday. Bye.